You've heard of Grammarly, and you might think it's a fancy spell check, but people on your team have been using it and loving it for years, because it does way more than you realise. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that works seamlessly across apps and websites and can write an instant first draft in a few clicks, not a few hours. When every word your team writes is clear, concise, and on brand, companies can save 19 days per employee per year. Learn what better writing can do for your company at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
Is realizing the full value of your network just a dream? Intel is bringing AI everywhere, building solutions to help modernize and monetize 5G infrastructure, making it possible for telecommunications providers to expand services and drive efficiency by reducing costs and saving energy. The next wave of networks starts with Intel. Learn more at intel.com/starts.
It can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
From the heart of where innovation, money, and power collide, in Silicon Valley and beyond, this is Bloomberg Technology with Emily Chang.
In San Francisco, and this is Bloomberg Technology. Coming up in the next hour, big tech stocks continue to sink. The NASDAQ 100 dropping more than 3%, dragged down by Amazon and Tesla. This on top of a big Bloomberg scoop that Tesla just laid off hundreds of autopilot workers in another round of job cuts. We will bring you all the details. And we'll be joined by the most decorated U.S. track and field athlete of all time, Olympic medalist Allyson Felix joins us to talk about her tech and investing play and how she plans to continue to fight for women and moms as she plots her retirement from professional sports. And it is the new TikTok for kids, and it's got the backing of the NBA. We'll talk to the head of the social network, Zigazoo, about their plans for kids and the metaverse later this hour. Meantime, Tesla is laying off more people, hundreds of workers on its autopilot team specifically. Joining us now for more on this, our own Ed Ludlow, who broke this story. So what do we know?
Yeah, so in the last few hours, Tesla has shuttered a facility in San Mateo where there were data scientists, data engineers working on autopilot. And basically what the team is doing is taking the video footage, right, from Tesla owners all around the world who have a camera-based system and annotating it, adding in data to help train the algorithms that improve future use cases like full self-driving, but improve the autopilot functionality. According to sources, they started with managers in the morning, and by the afternoon, they laid off largely the entire facility, which I'm told by one source is 200 to 250 people.
So does this change Tesla's priorities for autopilot? What does this mean?
You know, it's interesting. It could be perceived as a negative headline, but we know that there is a round of layoffs going on around the world globally. Elon Musk confirmed to Bloomberg last week in that exclusive interview that it's 10% of salaried workers only.
So this is part of that 10%, not an additional round.
Right. I think what's interesting is that autopilot, a real focus on AI, a real focus on software, we know that it's been an area of priority in terms of hiring for Tesla, especially in 2021. Elon Musk has talked about the importance of data labeling, and our engineering fans out there, software engineering fans, will know exactly what I'm talking about. But it just grew too quickly. And as Elon Musk pointed out to us, hourly workers, the folks on the assembly lines all around the world building vehicles, building batteries, those he expects to increase. So even though it's a 10% reduction of salaried, it's kind of more like a 3.5 overall.
So do we know where else the cuts are going to come from? And I mean, how is this impacting the workforce? Is everybody just bracing themselves?
You know, talk to a lot of sources who, and in some cases, similar to what's happened with autopilot, the writing was kind of on the wall. They were parts of those teams where loads of folks were hired very quickly. Dana Holt had that fantastic column the other day about how, in some cases, people were laid off who'd only been there for a few weeks. They've moved across the country to Austin, worked for a few weeks, and lost their jobs. These are hard things. But it's the reality, you know, in a global situation like
this. A human toll on the autopilot team. Okay, Ed, I know you're going to be with us a little bit later this hour, but thank you. Great scoop. I want to get back to the tech route, though, and bring in Mark Mahaney of Evercore. Mark, obviously, the numbers down. These stories from companies like Tesla don't help. Amazon, which I know, of course, you cover, also driving the news today. What are your big takeaways right now? Should investors be getting in or out?
We still have recessionary risk in these stocks. So last Friday, we lowered numbers by about 10% for Amazon. My guess is that most consumer tech stocks need that kind of magnitude of haircut to earnings. I think you're going to get that as we go through this earnings cycle. You need that. You need earnings to come down because of recessionary risk. And then you need inflationary forces to start ameliorating, or you need to see the first evidence that inflation is coming down. You didn't see that with the last CPI report. Hopefully you will see that with the next one. You get those two things, and then tech stocks may, the highest quality will be safe to get in and buy. I don't think they're safe to get in and buy until you see both of those things happen.
What about a company like Meta, which has dropped so much that folks are starting to think about it as a value stock? I mean, are we going to see Warren Buffett getting into Facebook?
That's an intriguing idea. Maybe. Look, there's some very high free cash flow yields now in the group. So names like Facebook, Google, Booking, Expedia, they offer 5, 6, 7, 8% free cash flow yields. You haven't seen that in this group in a long time. Google is on a multiple basis, or Alphabet, I'm sorry, on a multiple basis is the lowest it's been in, you know, about 10 years, not since the great financial crisis. Amazon is sitting at a multiple that's as low as it's been since the great financial crisis. And Amazon's a stronger asset than it was back then. It's got cloud computing. It didn't have that back then. So I think the valuations are highly attractive. But numbers first need to be reset, so valuations aren't quite as attractive. Just kind of take the multiples, add a point or two to them. Those are probably the real multiples on recession estimates. And so you first need, again, you need the cuts. And then you also need this signs that inflation is going to come down. And one of the things that came out of the consumer survey today was that consumers fear, the consumers' inflationary concerns are at the highest in the decade.
Mark, you also cover Pinterest. So curious what you think about this news. Ben Silberman, CEO and co-founder, stepping down. Yeah. Obviously, we know Pinterest has been battling some cultural and workplace issues, but also some growth issues. Bill Reddy, who is a longtime payments guy, worked at Braintree, PayPal, now Google. He's coming in as CEO. What's your read on this?
Well, this sounds, looks to me like a pretty drastic step, you know, especially if you don't bring somebody in internally within the company to take over. If you're bringing somebody from outside the company in, you've just thrown a lot of uncertainty into Pinterest and into the management team and into the employee base. So I know the stock gapped up in the aftermarket. It's sort of investors were looking for any change. Right now for us, Pinterest, we're on the sidelines on. We're not buyers of the stock, even though the stock has corrected a lot. User base has been declining. Unless the user base can grow, I don't think that that Pinterest can work as a stock. I think you want to be careful about Pinterest. I know the stock's gotten a lot more interesting valuation rise, but until you get growth in users to recover, I don't think you can. I don't think it's investable.
So, of the companies that you cover, as we're going into a recession, which are you most cautious on? I mean, is it Amazon, given the pressure on consumers? Is it Netflix, given, you know, them trying to rework this subscription model and get into advertising? Where are your biggest concerns?
In consumer internet, there's nothing that's recession-proof. Across consumer tech, there's nothing that's recession-proof. I think we need to remember that. That said, that there are assets that are more recession-resistant than others. Google is probably one of the most recession-resistant companies that I cover because it's search advertising, which will be the last part of advertising to get cut. And then it also has cloud computing, and cloud computing is as close to recession-proof of a business because it generates cost savings for the companies that deploy cloud computing. So Google strikes me as having the least risk to estimates, but it could still be a mid-single-digit percent cut to estimates because all advertising will get cut in a recession. It depends on the severity of the recession. The most impacted are going to be companies that are exposed to the most discretionary parts of consumer spend. So that's retail. And then retail, I think about eBay, I think about Etsy, I think about Shopify, that are purely discretionary spend. Those probably face the biggest potential estimates cuts. Amazon is probably in the middle, and we just cut those estimates by 10%. So that helps you figure out, you know, 5% cut to estimates for the most recession resistant, and 15% for the most recession impacted. And those are going to be the heavily consumer discretionary names.
All right. Well, thanks for helping us try to make sense of it all on another down day with more layoffs. Mark Mahaney of Evercore in London. Glad we were able to catch it. Coming up, the rise in cyber attacks, we're going to talk about the largest online attack ever recorded and Cloudflare's role in thwarting it. Matthew Prince with us next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
A development in the case of a ransomware gang that recruited a former Canadian government employee. That employee has agreed to plead guilty in the United States to charges he worked with the digital extortion group NetWalker, helping to rack up almost $50 million in illegal payments over the last 2 years. Hospitals, law enforcement organizations, schools, colleges, universities, all were targeted in these ongoing attacks, according to the FBI. Bloomberg's Jeff Stone joins us now with all the details. So, Jeff, this is a fairly unusual case. What makes it so unique?
Yes, thank you for having me, Emily. What makes this case particularly unusual is that we know a lot of these ransomware hackers, accused ransomware hackers, are typically based in Russia or in Eastern Europe outside of the reach of U.S. law enforcement, where they won't be extradited. In this case, it was a Canadian government employee who was from Quebec, actually, and he has agreed to plead guilty in a Tampa courtroom this afternoon, well within the reach of U.S. prosecutors, obviously.
How did he get involved?
Unclear. He is a former government employee. He worked for a federal agency until January that helped the government secure real estate. Before that, he appears to have had a conviction in a Canadian courtroom for a drug-related offense, but the exact nature of his actual involvement with the group still is not quite clear. He may have been involved, it appears, based on court documents, with some of the money laundering aspects of this organization.
So we're talking $46 million in ransomware payments here. How big a dent in this, in the broader scheme of all of the ransomware attacks happening around the world?
Not huge. The ransomware picture is much larger. NetWalker, based on figures that we've obtained, is probably in the top five largest groups, probably number four or five within that figure, though. What is particularly meaningful about this case and this group is that they have been specifically focused since the beginning of the COVID-19 pandemic on hospitals, healthcare organizations, medical facilities, and really schools, in trying to kind of knock them offline in order to earn as much of a profit as they possibly can in a short amount of time.
Interesting. All right. A case we'll continue to follow. Bloomberg's Jeff Stone. Meantime, Cloudflare says it helped thwart the biggest online attack ever recorded on June 14th without ever getting a human involved. Still, the company warns these attacks are getting more sophisticated every day. I'm joined now by Cloudflare CEO and co-founder Matthew Prince. Matthew, great to have you back. So tell us about this attack and how you stopped it.
Yeah, you know, every day at Cloudflare, we're stopping attacks. And I think what was unique about this one in June was it took to a different level the size and scale of attacks. And it, instead of compromising a bunch of household cameras and IoT devices, it's actually compromising cloud instances And that's a worrying new trend because each of those cloud instances obviously has a lot larger bandwidth and can do a lot more damage. And so I think we have seen an uptick in these attacks. We've seen an uptick in the size and scale that's going on. But what I'm really proud of our team is that we can stop just about anything which is thrown at us, and we continue to do that every single day.
So it sounds like you're saying the attacks are only going to get bigger. How, you know, dangerous is the threat landscape you see ahead? What's the role of the ongoing Russia-Ukraine war?
You know, I think that we as an industry really expected that attacks would tick up immediately after the Russian invasion of Ukraine. And while we did see some attacks specifically targeting Ukrainian infrastructure, the number of attacks was actually much less than we would see in sort of a usual sort of time, which was a surprise.
Why is that?
Well, I think a lot of the attacks came from criminal gangs that oftentimes shared individuals that were in both Russia and Ukraine, and those gangs were thrown into disarray. What's happened, though, in the last few weeks is that we've seen those attacks start to rise up again, and it looks like government-sponsored attacks. So, for example, the other day, Lithuania came under a significant attack. They turned to Cloudflare in order to make sure that they could stay online, and we helped protect them and get their government infrastructure back online. But we are seeing, while there was sort of a lull immediately after the invasion, we're starting to see that attacks tick up, and we're making sure that everyone has a shields up posture, every one of our customers is fully protected, and that we stand ready to protect any critical infrastructure in the United States or anywhere around the world.
Why do you think attacks are just now starting to tick back up? Is it, you know, a new level of organization after the initial invasion?
You know, I can't answer that question. I don't know exactly what's going on in the minds of the Russians and what their strategy is here. I think initially there was a lot of focus on what the Ukrainian infrastructure would have happened. But even when there was the invasion of Crimea, even when there was the invasion of Georgia, we actually saw many more cyber attacks in those particular times. And we saw a lot of probing ahead of the event, which gave us real concern that an invasion was coming even before it actually happened. But what we're seeing now is that there's starting to be what looks like some sort of retaliation against countries that are standing with Ukraine. And so Lithuania is one of the countries that announced that they were going to enforce some of the Russian sanctions. And I think that is a retaliation. And I think across Europe, across the United States, those people who are providing critical infrastructure need to make sure that they're ready for whatever may come next.
So let's talk about those shields, how strong they are, and if businesses are really prepared. You know, businesses are being told to, you know, adopt this zero trust approach, continuously authenticate individuals in and outside the organization at all times. Is it working? Are targets ready?
You know, I think it really depends on the industry and the sector. The good news is that if you adopt an approach like a company like Cloudflare has, like a company like Google has, which is known as this zero trust approach, then that really can protect you. It's a little bit, the best analogy I've had is it's a little bit like how we used to build boats versus how we build boats now. It used to be you built the whole of the boat as strong as you could, but if there was a leak anywhere, then the whole boat would flood and it would eventually sink. A zero trust approach to security is like bulkheads in a boat, so that if there's any leak anywhere in the boat, the whole boat doesn't sink. You might flood one compartment, but that doesn't cause a catastrophic problem. What I think has been incredibly important is making sure that those organizations that need the protection are there to have it. And so that's why we worked with law enforcement and government officials to launch the Critical Infrastructure Defense Project, where we provide our services at no cost to hospitals, water treatment facilities, the energy sector, because we know that this is a heightened time of security. And we want to make sure that those organizations have the best security possible.
Now, Cloudflare sits at a really interesting intersection of data and privacy, which of course has taken on new significance in the event of the overturning of Roe versus Wade. I'm curious how you're thinking about this, and have you seen an uptick in websites, you know, purporting to be a legitimate healthcare website, but is actually run by an anti-abortion group? And what approach are you taking here?
You know, I don't know that we've seen any examples of that. That may happen, but we don't tend to be kind of in the judging content business. What I can say is that we have now run for several years something called Project Galileo. And as we saw the leaked opinion from the Supreme Court come out, there's an increased number of attacks that were targeting abortion providers around the country. And so through Project Galileo, we stepped up to make sure that those providers could stay online, that they were protected. And we've really seen an uptick in the number of people that are providing abortion services that are under attack and that need our protection. And so we stand ready to protect anyone who's providing those services anywhere around the world. And if you need that help, if you go to cloudflare.com/Galileo, we provide our services at no cost to those organizations.
I mean, have you seen any change in traffic just over the last week? I mean, this just happened on Friday. And what's the ongoing plan in a post-Roe world?
Yeah, I think two things. One, there's been a significant uptick in what I would call attack traffic or illegitimate traffic. I think people who were against abortions are seeing this as vindication of their ability to go out and actually launch attacks and not feel guilty for it. Obviously, that's illegal in any circumstances, and we stand ready to help protect any of these organizations no matter what. On the other side, we're seeing more and more people who are trying to get clarification and understanding of what this means to them. And so the legitimate traffic is going through the roof. And again, that's somewhere where Cloudflare can help protect, not just against the illegitimate attacks, but make sure that these organizations have the resources to stay online when they're needed and the information they provide is so critical as a time when there's so much uncertainty like today.
Matthew Prince, CEO and co-founder of Cloudflare. Matthew, thank you for joining us and working through always some very complex issues. Another story we continue to watch, Airbnb has made it official. Its temporary ban on house parties and events is now permanent. The company stated in a blog post that the party ban became much more than a public health measure. So-called disruptive parties, open invite gatherings will continue to be prohibited, and those who break the rules could be kicked off the platform.
If you're an Apple fan, you'll be in for a very busy fall 2022 and first half of 2023. Apple's preparing one of its most ambitious new product cycles ever, including four new iPhone 14s, three new Apple Watches, a mixed reality headset, a new HomePod, an updated Apple TV, new AirPods Pro earbuds, new iPad Pros, as well as new M2 and M3 based Macs. The iPhone 14 Pro will be the big new iPhone story this year, adding a hole punch camera to replace the notch, an always-on display for iOS 16 lock screen widgets, a faster A16 processor, as well as a 48 megapixel camera on the back. The regular iPhone 14, however, will be a lesser update, retaining the A15 chip from last year's models. The Apple Watch Series 8 will have three new main configurations, a standard flagship model, a rugged edition, and a new low-cost SE. The flagship models are likely to add a new body temperature sensor, but the bad news is that the new variations are likely to stick to the same chip performance from 2 years ago. The iPad is also in for some big upgrades, with the M2 chip coming to the iPad Pro later this year, and the entry-level iPads geared towards students getting 5G, a USB-C port, and an updated processor. The M2 chip, along with 16 gigs of RAM, will also be coming to Apple's mixed reality headset. That's due to go on sale next year alongside Reality OS. Speaking of the M2, Apple's preparing several new Macs with that chip. That includes a new M2 Mac Mini, an M2 Pro Mac Mini, as well as M2 Pro and M2 Max 14-inch and 16-inch MacBook Pros. Apple's also already working on the M3. That's destined for an eventual update to the 13-inch MacBook Air, a new 15-inch MacBook Air, as well as a new iMac. The company's also working on a new 12-inch laptop. Apple's audio products are also due for upgrades. Expect new AirPods Pros later this year with better audio quality, as well as a new, larger HomePod with an S8 chip from the Apple Watch, as well as an updated display. For those looking for a living room upgrade, you can expect a new Apple TV set-top box with an A14 chip. That's up from the A12 in the current model. I'm Mark Gurman. This is Power On.
Bloomberg's Mark Gurman there. You can sign up for Mark's weekly Power On newsletter at Bloomberg.com. Now, we've talked a lot about women's reproductive rights in the last few days, given the Supreme Court's decision to overturn Roe versus Wade. Well, my next guest has spent years fighting for equality, especially for pregnant women. And as she looks to end her historic career as the most decorated U.S. track and field athlete of all time, Allyson Felix is now spending her time trying to help mothers and women of all ages succeed. She recently invested in Yumi, one of the fastest-growing baby food companies that uses science to create its menu. Allyson Felix joins us now. Allyson, it's wonderful to have you with us. Thank you for taking the time. Tell us about this partnership with Yumi and why, of all the things you and other superstar female athletes could support, you chose baby food.
Yeah, thank you so much for having me. As an athlete and as a mom, there's nothing more important than what we put into our bodies. And becoming, you know, a mother, my eyes were open with just the harmful things that we feed our children. And so I invested in Yumi because they're changing the industry and everything is backed with science and rooted in that. And so it was an incredible opportunity that they also have two incredible female founders that I wanted to support.
How are you thinking about this in the context of this nationwide baby formula shortage? I mean, you've got a lot of moms out there who feel like they can't feed their kids.
Yeah, it's such a difficult time. And, you know, mothers are dealing with so much. Parents are dealing with so much. And here's an incredible company that is producing this food and delivering it right to your doorstep. And so it's incredible because it's all organic and vegan, and just really love that, you know, you can get it directly to you.
You already have a successful athletic footwear brand that you started called Saish. You know, talk to us about what makes it different from the other options out there and what your ambitions are here.
Yeah, I'm so excited about Saish. What makes us different is that our footwear is specifically made to fit the shape of a woman's foot. We exist to know women, to hear them. And so we're so excited to continue to make products where women are not overlooked or an afterthought. And so I love that, you know, women's feet are different and we should have shoes specifically for us. And so I'm excited to continue to grow our brand.
You announced that pregnant women could return shoes if they don't fit right earlier this year. What do you think brands get wrong about pregnant women?
Yeah, I hope that, you know, our maternity returns policy, you know, can set the tone for what should happen in the industry. Because as a pregnant woman, your foot can change. And what a lot of people don't know is that that change in size can be permanent. And so we're offering your correct size, you know, a return for free. And I think that, you know, we need to support women holistically and really just show up for them. And here's just another small way where we can say you don't have to choose between motherhood and anything else.
You, of course, made headlines back in 2019 with a famous op-ed pushing Nike to reevaluate their maternity policy for sponsored athletes. They listened and they did change that policy. And I have to wonder what you're thinking now, 4 or 5 days after this decision by the Supreme Court to overturn Roe versus Wade. How are you processing this? What's your reaction?
Yeah, it's been difficult. You know, I think anytime a woman's rights are taken away, it's hard. And I'm a fierce advocate for women, a fierce, you know, individual who wants to fight on behalf. And so, you know, it's a long way to go from here, but we're not going to stop.
What would you like to see companies do for women in this moment, whether they want to pursue an abortion or perhaps they want to keep a pregnancy in light of this law?
I think it's really a holistic approach and stepping up and saying that we're going to be there and to support in every way possible. But I think it's a great opportunity for companies, for organizations to be able to step up.
We just celebrated the 50th anniversary of Title IX. And of course, you've been fighting for women's equality now for so many years. You're now dabbling in an industry, investing in tech that has a history of inequity and women and women of color not being treated fairly, not being treated fairly as entrepreneurs. How do you think your work and, you know, what you've experienced as an athlete can contribute more here?
Yeah, I really hope to focus on, you know, underserved founders, underserved people who aren't represented throughout my entire career, being able to see representation, being able to see diversity and see myself and others has really inspired me. And so that's something that I don't want to stop.
All right. Allison Felix, thank you so much for helping us, coming here to help us help you start that next chapter. Thank you for taking the time to join us. All right. Meantime, Disney has extended the contract of CEO Bob Chapek for 3 more years, giving a vote of confidence to a CEO who has battled much controversy and a crippling pandemic. Chapek has transformed the company into a streaming powerhouse while also battling with Florida, the home of Disney World, over a new law restricting the discussion of gender in school. Coming up, a social network that is teaching kids about NFTs, and it's being backed by the NBA. More on what that is next. This is Bloomberg.
What if everyone at work were an expert communicator? What if every doc, message, and email they wrote was perfectly clear and concise? Inbox numbers would drop, customer satisfaction scores would rise, and everyone would be more productive. That's where Grammarly comes in. Grammarly is a secure AI writing partner that understands your business and can transform it through better communication. Companies that use Grammarly save an average of 19 days per employee per year. That's because with Grammarly's AI, what used to take a few hours only takes a few clicks, like generating an instant first draft in your company voice or tailoring a message to your specific audience and goals. And Grammarly's personalized on-brand writing help is built in everywhere your team works, across 500,000 apps and websites. Plus, it's safe, secure, and already IT approved. Join 70,000 teams who trust Grammarly with their words and their data. Learn more at Grammarly.com. Grammarly. Easier said, done.
You know, it can be hard to see the challenges that people we work with every day are going through. Invisible struggles like stress and burnout, caregiving for a loved one, or being misunderstood. But insight, awareness, and empathy will help us better see the issues they're dealing with. And that can make us and our companies healthier too. I'm Holly Robinson-Pete. Join us on The Visibility Gap, a new podcast presented by Cigna Healthcare. Download it wherever you get your podcasts.
Time now for our crypto report, and I want to take a look at the future of kids in the metaverse. We're focusing on Zigazoo, a TikTok-style video sharing app for kids, which just raised $17 million from the likes of TikTok stars Charli and Dixie D'Amelio and also the NBA. The kids' social network is now looking to expand into augmented reality and the metaverse. Founder and CEO Zach Ringelstein joins me now for more on all of this. And Zach, you're a former teacher. How exactly does this work? What are kids doing on Zigazoo?
That's correct. Such a pleasure to be here. Thank you for having us. Zigazoo was started out of our own home. My wife Leah and I have three kids, three boys, and we were trying to figure out at the beginning of the pandemic what to do with them. And we were really bummed out that the only thing you could do with your kids online was basically play a game or watch or oftentimes binge TV. Knowing that, you know, we're going to give our kids a bit more of a digital diet during the pandemic, we wanted kids to reach the top of Bloom's taxonomy, which in teaching is creation. You want kids to be creating. And you also, by the way, want them to be creating in a healthy environment with friends. And people thought this was kind of impossible, right? And then we realized that it wasn't impossible and that we could use the construct of project-based learning, which is one of the best, based on research, ways to teach kids and give kids purpose in schools, to basically do challenges. And so we gave kids challenges at the beginning of the pandemic. And now we have everyone from the NBA to Nickelodeon to Cocomelon to today. We just launched a Blippi channel on Zigazoo. So all you parents out there, there are all these great challenges that kids can do. It could be something, you know, for Nickelodeon, we had the Gronk on Zigazoo saying, hey, what would your face look like if you got slimed? And now we have the NBA on asking questions like, what would your best slam dunk look like?
And now you're getting into NFTs. What are you teaching kids about NFTs?
Sure. So You know, there are a lot of ways to do Web3 wrong, and crypto gets a bad rap, but the reality is that it's the future of the internet. Web3 is Web3 because it's after Web2, and we want to get ahead of the game by providing opportunities for kids to get to know this technology. It has the potential to be a creation-based technology where kids are creating their future, and blockchain technologies are more sophisticated and will allow kids to do so. We're giving kids opportunities to do so. We've been able to bring on some of the biggest talent and brands in the world to create their own NFTs. We're giving kids opportunities in contests and otherwise to build art and show them off to their friends. And then we're providing other blockchain technologies that allow kids to be basically creators in their own studio and to really start to think of themselves less as consumers and more as creators in this environment.
So I've got four kids, and I got to be honest with you, the thought of my kids on TikTok for Kids is a little bit terrifying, let alone my kids in the metaverse. Why shouldn't parents be worried about this?
Well, so I think that there are all these vocabulary words that are thrown out there to create fear. And the reality is that 50% of kids are on social media, but they're on social media that you wouldn't want your kid on, right? Social media is here. It's here to stay. It's the language of kids. And so we think the best solution is to create opportunities that are safe, that are educational, that are constructive. And to do that in a way that, you know, really blends the world of education and entertainment. And that's exactly what we've done. We have the highest ratings from Common Sense Media. We have Safe Harbor from the FTC, where KidSafe COPPA certified. And we've been able to create what is really this safe and lovely network of kids creating. It's one of only two platforms that I let my own three kids use, and we are very, very strict about the way that we think about technology.
What's the other one?
We let them watch Netflix for Kids.
Okay. So look, why do you think you can do it better than the other guys? You know, there was a huge outcry when Instagram announced it was going to try to do Instagram for Kids, and it's been permanently on pause.
So we have built Zigazoo truly ground up for kids, by kids, and you know, every single decision in the product is made with kids in mind. Whereas obviously we know that that's not the case with a lot of other social networks. One of the things that we keep hearing, you know, from reviewers of our platform is when we go on Zigazoo, we're stunned by the fact that kids' childhoods are being preserved. There is no commenting and no negativity on our platform. We have this these opportunities for kids only to shout each other out. So kids are on there being goofy, sharing their funniest jokes, laughing, singing, dancing, being kids. And that's what I'm most proud of, is that, you know, at the end of the day, technology is here. If we try to prevent kids from using it, it's just not going to work. So what we need to do is give them the guiding principles and the right guardrails to be able to be kids and protect their childhoods in a way that's safe and that allows them to laugh and squeal and be funny and just be themselves. And we have done that and given kids a lot of confidence in the meantime.
What does the NBA bring to the table, or the court, I should say?
So, you know, as a basketball fan, my dad's a huge basketball fan. I'm a huge basketball fan. One of the things that we love about the NBA is that what the NBA does for kids, and as an educator, I can say this through and through with my experience with kids, is it teaches kids about being a good teammate. You know, the NBA is about sports and being healthy. It's about, you know, fashion and you know, whatever else it might be. It's giving kids confidence. And we think that the values of the NBA are really reflected in Zigazoo as well. Zigazoo isn't a game you sit on your couch for hours and hours. It's a way that you bring, you know, technology, just like you would Google Maps or your own social media, into the world. It is asking you to do challenges that are active as opposed to passive. And we think that the NBA is a perfect partner in helping to celebrate health, well-being, being healthy, safety, joy, camaraderie, being social but safe. Those are the things that we know that the NBA brings. Also, I became a sports fan when I was this age, right? I started becoming a fan of my favorite sports teams and players then. And the same is true, you know, here. So this is just a special way to give kids opportunities to become fans in their medium, right? This isn't I'm a millennial. This isn't my medium as much. This is their medium. They're digital natives. They already know what they're doing. And so we're providing a safe opportunity where they're joyful and absolutely love it. And that's why we're growing so fast and we're able to secure such amazing funding.
Okay. We will keep following you guys. Zigazoo founder and CEO Zach Ringelstein, thank you for joining
us. Such a pleasure. Really.
The price of oil just rose for a third straight day, and that strength in crude has kept U.S. retail gas prices near record highs, causing huge pain in particular for drivers of Uber and Lyft. Now, a wave of gig economy drivers are turning to Tesla and other EV makers as gas prices squeeze their profits. Our Ed Ludlow joins us now with more. What are they doing?
Yeah, this is incredible. It's data from an app called Gridwise. So if you're a gig economy worker doing rideshare, you use this to manage your trips. And compared with June last year and the latest data for May, the number of drivers that said they had a Tesla as their vehicle jumped 185%.
So even though the prices of Tesla are rising.
Right, but the point is the price of gas is so painful. I mean, we're down from that peak of national average $5 per gallon, but it's still up there, right? We're not that far off five here in California. Come on.
It's horrible. It's painful indeed. And any Uber driver you talk to, Lyft driver you talk to, they're hurting.
I mean, that's
they're really hurting.
It's what eats into their profit, or in other words, the money they take home.
Are the platforms doing anything to help drivers switch?
Kind of. So Uber has a partnership with Hertz, where if you're an Uber driver, you can rent a Hertz for $350 a week. A week. Still quite a lot, but it includes insurance, maintenance, unlimited mileage. I lease a vehicle, won't say which one, but I'm limited on the miles I can drive. If you're Uber driving day and night, you can't have that. And they say that the economics are good right now for that. Lyft, zero financial incentives.
So if you can't get onto that Hertz plan, do you just have to buy a Tesla?
Well, go on the Tesla website, try and buy yourself a Model Y or a Model 3, look at the cost, but then look at how long it will take for it to be delivered. Model Y, you're looking at January to April of next year. If that's your livelihood, I don't think you're able to wait.
How much is this impacting overall Tesla demand in the middle of all of these layoffs, as you were reporting earlier in the show?
Here's the thing. Demand is a lever for Tesla. They are supply constrained. In other words, more demand than they can possibly build vehicles to meet right now.
And also more workers than they need to build those vehicles?
And if you're a company and you're a shareholder of that company, it could be a nice problem to have.
Oh, and by the way, Elon Musk hasn't tweeted in a few days.
I think it's 6 days.
6 days? I mean, that must be a record.
Yeah. I mean, we're all waiting for a certain deal to get done, and I'm waking up in the middle of the night to check if it's happened or not.
Oh, Ed, I hope you get some more sleep. But thank you for holding down the fort. And Ludlow, thank you for that and your big scoop earlier today. That does it for this edition of Bloomberg Technology. We're back here tomorrow. The CEO of Betterment will be joining us to talk about fintech, as well as HP CEO Antonio Neri. And don't forget to check out our podcast wherever you get your podcasts. I'm Emily Chang in San Francisco. This is Bloomberg.
I'm Alex Rodriguez.
And I'm Jason Kelly.
From Bloomberg, this is The Deal. Each week, you'll hear us in conversation with business icons.
This show will explore deal-making across sports, media, and entertainment.
That is a harsh lesson in business.
Sports is not as simple as bringing a bunch of big names together.
I didn't want to do another stomp you out speech.
It opened up so many more doors.
The show is called The Deal.
Listen to The Deal wherever you get your podcasts.
And watch on Bloomberg Originals, Bloomberg Television, or BTV+.